This is New Beginnings, hosted by award-winning broadcaster and speaker Freddie Bell. A program for and about America's 78 million baby boomers. Here's your host, Freddie Bell.
Hi, everybody. It's the last weekend of the month. And coming up, we welcome Cassie Crandall. She's talking about lifestyle. I have a healthcare update for you. We learn more about personal finance from Leibold Sternbach. And we have today's words to the wise. And we'll tell you about honesty. To learn more, stay with us because New Beginnings is starting now. With us right now is our career expert, Mr. Joe McKenzie, who has the knack of turning candidates into contenders. You can visit with Joe McKenzie directly if you like. His website is rippleconnects.com, and you can call him by telephone at 763-438-1621. Joe McKenzie, good morning and welcome.
Good morning, Freddie. How are you today?
Unbelievable, and I'm really excited to talk about our topic today, which is entitled Perseverance. And I'm just curious, where did this idea come from, the title today?
It comes from your book that I've been able to read this winter, and page 63 specifically, you know, persevering through don't stop trying during trying times. Freddie, your own words have helped me not only with my professional life, my home life, and just everything that, you know, you seem like you're going through trying times. But Freddie, when you wrote those words, it was almost like you're writing them to me, because you can't stop. You have to persevere. And I know, I'm confident that there are people out there that are going, working through some trying times. And I wanted to go back and forth with you on, you know, how you work through trying times, and I'll share how I've done it, and for the benefit of our listeners. And I think that's powerful, and I appreciate your Words to the Wise book, because I can focus on one page and how I'm going to apply it that week.
It's really interesting. Thank you for that, Joe. He's talking about words to the wise as I lose my voice this morning. But on page 63 of the book, it does say, words to the wise, don't stop trying during trying times. And I know that people tend to give up. I'll just couch it this way. Have you ever had a difficult time in your life, Joe McKenzie?
I look back on some difficult times with, you know, obviously some pain, but also finding a strategy and how I got through it and a new perspective on what I went through.
It's interesting. So the first thing that I think is important during trying times is, number one, is to consider your options.
Okay.
And as you look at that, I mean, you can get really caught up in the issue with which you're being faced at that particular time, whatever it might be. There's a tendency to become just completely involved in whatever the issue or concern happens to be. Have you ever experienced that?
Yeah, you're not, like you said, it's important to have those, consider your options, but often I find myself looking at the pain point or the trying, what's causing the trying time, without considering my options. I guess I become very myopic on what's occurring and not even thinking about what my options could be.
Well, that's really an important step, because what it does when we consider our options during difficult times as a way to go forward, as a way to persevere, it really lays out pretty clearly for us in that meeting that you're having with yourself, or maybe with your significant other, or a person who's really close for you, or as you mentioned, your bench of advocates, that you can see in clear detail what the options might be. Maybe it's option one, maybe it's option two, maybe you like to use alphabet A, B, or C. And so that's number one. You need to look at or identify, and maybe that's a better word, identify what the options are when you're going through a difficult time.
Do you suggest, you know, trying that out, trying it earlier, so you can kind of train your brain on how to consider those options earlier on versus becoming so in depth with the issue?
Well, that's the point. Now that we understand this idea, as soon as those trying times start, I mean, it's human nature to do the oh, woe is me dance, or to sing that song. But as we go through the difficult times, we have to really corral the thoughts of our minds and say, okay, what are the options in front of me? And then I like to transcribe. I don't use the iPad or my phone. I like to write those down because something happens when I physically start to write. So I write down what those options are. Option A, option B, option C. So those are the options. Then the next step in trying to persevere is a decision time. Now you have to decide what option is best for you. That can be difficult, Joe McKenzie.
From what you just said, it helps you move to an actionable frame of mind versus standing still, caught up in that, oh, woe is me. So writing those options down helps you to kind of work through some discernment on what are your options, but also what writing it down will allow you to look at what your options are and really work through that. And obviously, it's much more productive and positive outcome to have those options versus to be mired in that those trying times with seemingly with no option. That's what I hear you saying.
Exactly, because we can seem as if there is no way out, there's no way forward, so to speak. But when you have those options in front of you, maybe you've had that meeting with yourself and you write those ideas down, then you go back and you take a look, then it's easier to understand what the different options that are really in front of you, and you may even develop more. And then it becomes decision time. What option might be best for you? Now it's time to go ahead and test that option. That's when it's important to do the scenarios. What if I do this? What happens next? What's the result of this if I take this option? There are always options, whether it's one that you may not particularly like, but it certainly gets you out of that headspace.
Yes, I agree with that. And obviously, if anybody's in a bad work situation, that can be very trying times because you bring that home, you bring that to your life, you bring that to every touch point, and those are truly trying times.
That's exactly right. We're just about out of time, but I'll share this with you. It's never as bad as you think it is until you consider the options, you test that decision, and then you move forward with a mighty faith knowing that everything does work out well.
I appreciate that, Freddie, because like I said, page 63 meant a lot to me this past winter because I worked through trying times over my career, but you've also fleshed out how I can apply that to my everyday life. So I appreciate that. Thank you.
My pleasure. Joe, you do some fine work at Ripple Connect, sir.
Yes, we do. We turn candidates into contenders.
And let's talk a little bit about your health this weekend on New Beginnings. There's a survey that says to live longer is suggesting that we work out 150 minutes a week. This is not new. We've talked about this a few times before on New Beginnings. And for anyone interested in the relationship between exercise and living longer, one of the most pressing questions is how much we really need to stay healthy. Is 30 minutes a day enough? Can we get by with less? Do we have to exercise all in one session? Or can we spread it out during the day? And when we're talking about exercise, does it have to be hard to count? For years, exercise scientists tried to quantify the ideal dose of exercise for most people. They finally reached a broad consensus a few years ago, in 2008 to be exact, with the Physical Activity Guidelines for America, which were updated in 2018 after an extensive review of the available science about movement, sitting, and health. Now, in both versions, the guidelines advise anyone who is physically able to accumulate 150 minutes of moderate exercise every week and half as much if it's intense. But what's the best way to space out those weekly minutes? And what does moderate mean? Here's what some leading researchers in exercise science had to say about weekend warriors, greater longevity, and why the healthiest step we can take is the one that gets us off the couch. For longevity, 150 minutes a week of moderate to vigorous intensity physical exercise is clearly enough. That according to Dr. Aimin Lee, a professor of epidemiology at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. She has extensively studied movement and health and helped draft the current National Physical Activity Guidelines. For practical purposes, exercise scientists also recommend breaking that 150 minutes into 30-minute sessions of speedy walking or a similar activity 5 times a week. They say it is quite clear from numerous large-scale, well-conducted epidemiological studies that 30 minutes of moderate intensity activity most days lowers the risk of premature death and many diseases such as stroke, heart attack, type 2 diabetes, and many types of cancer. That according to Ulf Ekland, a professor specializing in physical activity epidemiology at the Norwegian School of Sports Sciences in Oslo, who has led many of these studies. Moderate exercise means activities that increase your breathing and heart rate, so the exertion feels like a 5 or a 6 on a scale of between 1 and 10. In other words, he says, pick up the pace if your inclination is to stroll, but don't feel compelled to sprint. You also can break up your exercise into smaller segments. That was one of our questions. It doesn't matter whether exercise is done in a long, continuous 30-minute session or if it's dispersed across the day in shorter sessions. That according to Emmanuel Stamatakis, an exercise scientist at the University of Sydney in Australia who studies physical activity and health. Finally, recent studies show that we can accumulate our 150 weekly minutes of moderate exercise in whatever way works best for us. 1 or 2 minute walks between tasks even works. There's no special magic to a sustained 30-minute session of exercise for most health benefits. And finally, to concentrate the health benefits of these workout nuggets, he says, keep the intensity relatively high so you feel somewhat winded. Think of those bite-sized workouts as exercise snacks, he says. And while we're talking about health, researchers at the University of Minnesota created a birth control pill for male mice, which proved 99% effective in preventing pregnancy. The contraceptive targets a protein in the body that receives a form of vitamin A, which is involved with sperm production and fertility. Researchers gave this compound, referred to as YCT-529, to male mice for 4 weeks. The animals showed drastically lower sperm counts. 4 to 6 weeks after they stopped receiving the contraceptives, the mice could impregnate a female mouse again. Since the 1970s, scientists have been researching ways to create a male birth control pill. While the team behind this new study is encouraged by their promising results, others are skeptical and see it as just another intriguing advancement that may not actually make it to the market. I would be very skeptical until I see human data that, according to Dr. Amin Harati, he's the director of the Male Infertility and Men's Health Program within Brady Urological Institute at Johns Hopkins, and he says there are key differences between how human and mice genes interact and in the reproductive systems. He goes on to say that you really don't know what they do unless you do toxicology studies. The researchers have conducted toxicology studies in mice, but stress that human trials are needed to assess the safety of the pill. However, even if this pill fails in future trials, now that researchers have discovered the compound, they may be able to create backup options for the pill. That according to M. Abdullah Al Norman, a graduate student at the University of Minnesota who presented the findings at a meeting of the American Chemical Society on Wednesday. This is a trailblazer of a non-hormonal birth control. We'll have to find out what happens. And finally, as we're talking about health, COVID-19 patients can harbor the coronavirus in their feces for months after infection, according to researchers, stoking concern that its persistence can aggravate the immune system and cause long COVID symptoms. In the largest study tracking COVID in feces and the COVID-19 symptoms, scientists at California Stanford University found that about half of infected patients shed traces of the virus in their waste in the week after infection, and almost 4% of patients still admit them several months later. The researchers also linked coronavirus RNA and feces to gastric upsets and concluded that the SARS-CoV-2 likely directly infects the gastrointestinal tract where it may hide out. That according to a senior author on the study published online in the journal Med and an associate professor of medicine and genetics at Stanford. Lingering virus might directly invade cells and damage tissues that are provoking the immune system. That's a look at health this weekend on New Beginnings. I'm Freddie Bell, and our show continues right now.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
How about some entertainment news this week on New Beginnings? The home that once belonged to Betty White is hitting the market. TMZ is reporting that the home, which is located in Brentwood, California, is listed for about $10.5 million. The late Golden Girls actress moved into the over 3,000-square-foot home in 1968, and she lived there until she died last New Year's Eve. The home includes a backyard swimming pool with a view of the famous Getty Museum. An upcoming adaptation of the musical Wicked is set to be split into two films. The director made the announcement on social media. The first movie will release on December 25th, 2024, and the second will come out on December 25th, 2025. Wicked, the movie, will star Ariana Grande and Cynthia Erivo as Glinda and Elphaba. The prequel to The Wizard of Oz tells a story of everything leading up to when Dorothy arrives in Oz. Warner Brothers Discovery is set to cut scripted programming at TBS and TNT. Variety is reporting if the cable channels will stop developing new scripted content. It's unclear what will happen to the current slate of both networks' scripted programming. TNT currently has two scripted shows on its programming, Snowpiercer and Animal Kingdom, with the latter coming to an end after its sixth season airs. And an Ohio home is designed to look like the set of a TV show, Friends, and used as an Airbnb is now for sale. The three-bedroom home in the Dayton area has walls painted in the same color and kitchen cabinets from the apartment set used by the Monica Geller character on the sitcom that ran from 1994 to 2004. Built in 1940, the more than 1,100-square-foot home comes fully furnished with all Friends-themed accessories. Current list price is $135,000. And speaking of homes, one that sold for more than $800,000 in Fairfax, Virginia, is coming with an unusual feature. The 5-bedroom, 4-bathroom house sold earlier this month, but the listing generated headlines as it read that there would be an occupant living in the basement of the home. It's being reported that the property received 5 offers and was under contract for an amount above the asking price. A neighbor told the news outlet that a woman and her daughter live in the basement. And finally, a British study is showing that toddlers who have a diet high in processed foods may have a slightly lower IQ later in life. So when your college grad fails the bar exam, don't blame him. Blame the Lunchables you gave him in grade school. Just for fun on New Beginnings. In our never-ending effort to find valuable information and insight in all areas, it's time to bring in Cassie Crandall with this week's 3 Things.
Thank you, Freddie. All right, my thing one this week. Have y'all ever been on a college tour with your child? Well, my husband and I have 6 kids between us, and so we've done a few college tours. I suggest you start training for this college tour several weeks in advance, because I tell you what, every time, it never fails, it's a young girl, I have yet to see a guide leading the college tour, but it's a current student at the college or university, and they are talking a mile a minute and walking a mile a minute. Why they're not considering that parents of college-age students, you know, might have some physical ailments and walk a little slower than others, me, I don't know. But they seem to think that they're taking 20-year-olds on this college tour when really they're taking a bunch of parents who might be in their 50s plus and the kids. So I'd just like to say, could you slow it down a little bit? As I prepare to take my youngest son on a university tour in a couple of weeks, I'm kind of scared. Do I bring a walker? Maybe that would help them slow down. I don't know. I mean, I have nothing against exercise. It's great. But I'd like to see the university maybe at a slower pace, you know, without just running by the science building. And instead of pointing out the lounge area with the Starbucks, couldn't we make a stop there? So, prepare for your college tour, get your walking in, and right before you start, do your stretches, make sure you're in good shape, you have the proper shoes on, oh, and sunscreen and a hat or umbrella, because you never know what's going to happen outside. Yeah, those are Cassie's tips for a college university tour with your kid. Okay, on to thing number 2. So I came across this great story that I just really felt the need to share with you. Did you know that in Denmark, there are libraries where you can borrow a person instead of a book to listen to their life story for 30 minutes? The goal is to fight prejudice. Each person has a title: unemployed, refugee, bipolar, etc. But listening to their story, you realize how much you shouldn't judge a book by its cover. This innovative project is active in 85 countries plus. It's called the Human Library. How cool is that? I hope we have one here in the U.S. I'll have to do a little more research about that, but it's so easy for us sometimes to judge a book by the cover. I worked in retail many years ago, and we had a clientele that was usually pretty well off. And there were times when people came in and they didn't look like they had a dime, but they would be the one who spent the most amount of money. So you never know. Don't judge people by how they look. Any case, the Human Library, what a cool concept. And last but not least, my thing number three this week. I have a habit of sometimes blurting things out because my mind is going so fast as someone else is talking. And sometimes instead of listening as intently as I should be, I'm thinking of the next thing that I'm going to say. So it's something I've been trying to work on. I'm always trying to make improvements here and there when I realize things about myself. So often I just want to blurt something out in the middle of someone else talking. And that's rude. I don't like when someone does it to me. So I've been working on it. And my husband will probably tell you that I'm not very good at it. But in any case, I'm trying. And I'm experiencing the value of just taking the time and listening to the other person, taking in their perspective, taking in what they have to say about whatever's going on with them, and how valuable that is. Valuable not only to them, that you're taking the time to truly listen to them and truly hear them, hopefully, but the value to me, that I'm shutting off my brain. I'm not thinking about the next thing I'm going to say, but I'm thinking about what they're saying and focusing my brain completely on that person and what they're thinking and what they're trying to tell me. Or maybe they're just venting and they just need someone to listen and I'm listening to them. I think about all the times in my life that I haven't thought before I started to speak, and I'm trying to be more mindful about that these days. It's not always easy, but I'm trying. For New Beginnings, I'm Cassie Crandall.
Thanks so much, Cassie. We'll talk to you again next week.
In today's world, we really need words of encouragement. Introducing Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell. Let your mind be opened by the wisdom of thought. Let the inspiration of the words feed your mind, body, and spirit. Regardless of the issues you face each day, Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell can help you power through. Words to the Wise by Freddie Bell, a handy reference. Available on Amazon, FreddieBell.com, and Barnes & Noble.
Get the most from AARP, including advice and support to help you care for your loved ones. Fraud prevention with tips and tools to help protect you from scams and fraud, including a free helpline if you've been targeted, a scam tracking map, and watchdog alerts via email through the AARP Fraud Watch Network. If you don't know AARP, you don't know ARP.
More information at AARP.org. Did you know that now you can see and hear Sunday morning services from Unity South Twin Cities? Search Unity South Twin Cities online and Facebook and catch the live stream Sunday mornings at 10:30 on Facebook.com.
This is a news-oriented broadcast, and all information is educational in nature, is not intended to be legal, securities, tax, or insurance advice. Please consult with the appropriate professional before acting on information heard during the broadcast.
You're listening to New Beginnings.
New Beginnings with Freddie Bell.
Hi, everyone. I'm Freddie Bell, and now it's time to talk finance with Libel Sternbach. Libel is an Amazon best-selling author of Living with Financial Anxiety and Authenticity. Libel, welcome back to New Beginnings. How are you this week?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Unbelievable. I heard that spring is maybe a month behind, but I won't worry about that too much. I've got a big coat. Let's talk about the economy a little bit. Just off the top, Libel, do you think that the nation is heading for a recession?
So I personally don't think that we're heading towards a recession, or at least a typical recession when we think about it, you know, where you got job loss, businesses aren't investing in the future. And the future has a lot of uncertainty in it. So people are kind of holding on to what they have because they want to have that cash. They want to hoard those resources. And they're expecting, you know, they're expecting a, you know, economic turbulence, coming forward. So they're hoarding. And they don't invest in the future. They don't hire new people. They fire people where they can. So I don't think we're heading towards that. In fact, when we look at, you know, kind of all the signposts that would tell us that we're, you know, heading towards a recession, you know, unemployment is at, you know, very low levels, which could sometimes be a leading indication of a recession, but I don't think so. I don't think that we're, I think we may be in a situation where we don't have enough employees to fill all the jobs that are going to be coming. And I think that our economy is actually going to grow. Now, the economy and the market are two separate things. But I do think that economically, I think we'll be fine. I think there will be some reshuffling. Some industries will hurt more than others. But overall, I think the U.S. economy is going to do all right. Of course, assuming that, you know, Congress and the Fed don't scare people off too much.
Everybody, Libel Sternbach with us this weekend. We're having a wonderful discussion about the economy and a recession. So you mentioned a leading indicator of a recession. So what are some others? But what are, let's go the other side of this. What are some indicators that we are not heading for a recession?
So one indicator that you're probably hearing a lot about is, you know, this inverted yield curve. And the idea, I'm not going to get into the technicalities of what it is, but the idea is that when people are willing to pay more for short-term loans versus long-term loans, it gives the impression that people are afraid of the future. And so they want immediate returns now versus they think that nothing's going to be happening between now and 10 years from now or 20 years from now, which is a very weird place to be in, right? If I'm going to hold on to your money for 20 years, you would think that you would demand more for that money than if you were to hold on to it for a few years. And so when people see that, they get scared and like, oh, that means that there's a recession coming. It's not really a very good indication of a recession. Yes, it's happened in the past, but I think it's more something that is coincidental rather than a cause and effect. There's a lot of reasons why interest rates are acting wonky the way they are, and it's more about the global marketplace than anything to do with our economy.
So you're saying then that this is not something that we should be concerned about at this point?
I wouldn't be concerned about it in the context of a recession. Mm-hmm. I would be concerned about it more towards, you know, how are the central banks of the various countries going to act upon this? And what does this mean from the U.S. government standpoint, where we've been attracting a lot of foreign assets into treasuries because we've been paying, you know, some of the highest interest rates around the world. And now as other nations are increasing their interest rates that they're paying on their bonds and their notes, what will that do to the money that's been sitting with us? Will that increase the amount that the Fed has to pay out in interest, which means that the federal government has to come up with that money? That might be, you know, a question mark that is a concern. That's something that Congress needs to stay on top of, that the Fed needs to stay on top of. And it could lead to higher taxes. It could also lead to some inflationary pressure. But as far as a recession is concerned, right, when we talk about people buying goods and services, and the fact is that most of our economy is domestic and our internal economy is doing really well and more of it's coming home. So
We're talking with Leibel Sternbach. He is the author of Living with Financial Anxiety. And I want to focus in on the anxiety part about it. You've made a very good case for America not going into a recession. So what advice would you share with someone who is worried or they have anxiety, if you will, about a recession that you don't see coming?
So I think that when we feel anxious, we need to look at what is triggering that anxiety. And the first thing we need to do is we need to acknowledge that anxiety is a survival mechanism. It is our lizard brain. It is our this great instrument, this great organ that we have in our body that has evolved over time to help us survive in so many different environments. And it is telling us that something about our environment is different, that something about what we are encountering is a threat to the status quo. And that threat could potentially mean that we won't have food on the table or a roof over our head or shelter or whatever it is that upsets us, right? That makes us feel vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so we need to look at that and say, okay, what is it that is making us feel anxious? And then we need to work to address those. Part of living in a civilized society is the fact that we are not surrounded by predators. And so those instincts, those fight or flight instincts, those things that tell us, you know, we should be afraid for our lives, we need to learn to redirect those energies. And so, yes, there may be something that is dangerous, that's different, but is it a fight for our lives? Probably not, but your subconscious may be picking up on something that you're not. Maybe it picked up on the fact that you're working a job that is vulnerable to a recession. Maybe it picked up on the fact that you need to increase your skill sets to get a higher paying job, or maybe you need to increase your cash reserves, or maybe there's something that you're not taking care of yourself that you should be taking care of, that now is the time to prepare for what could be, a few turbulent years. I think that while we may not have a recession, and I personally think that the chances of a recession are unlikely, I don't think anyone wants a recession. I think everyone's going to do everything possible to prevent a recession. I do think that there is going to be a shuffling around of industries. I think that a lot of the old jobs are going to go away, and people are going to have to learn new skills to be able to provide in this coming economy that's going to develop over the next 15 years.
So talk about shuffling of economy. What do you mean? It's interesting to me that we've heard a lot of talk about hospitality workers are going away. Mm-hmm. Where did they go? Is this a part of the reshuffling as an example, only as an example, sir?
Yeah. It is absolutely an example. So something that's happened interesting, if you look in Asia and, you look at the developed nations in Asia, so, Japan, South Korea, and some, Singapore, when you look at those countries, what you find is that the service jobs where, it's nice that we have a person doing the job, but you don't really need a person to do the job. They have been slowly automating those jobs. So, like McDonald's doesn't have people taking orders. COVID helped accelerate that in the US, but if it wasn't for COVID, it would probably be another 5 or 10 years before they got rid of, order takers. But now in Europe and Asia, right, they've had that for years, and it's just becoming commonplace that you don't have order takers in a fast food restaurant. Hospitality, Japan has completely automated hotels where there's literally maybe one person in the entire building, but you go in and it's a robot that greets you. It gives you your room key. Or I think the Marriott started rolling out. I know a bunch of hotels started rolling it out where you can even check in on your phone. You don't even talk to anyone. You just go to the door and your phone acts as the key. So those jobs where, you were sitting there and you checked people into the hotel. Well, why were you doing that? Nobody needed that. The hotel was booked online, right? That was paid for online. So what are you doing at that front desk other than punching keys into a very old computer? And so jobs like that are going to go away. Now, the jobs that are going to stay, someone still needs to clean the room, right? And it's still cheaper to pay someone to clean the room than to have a machine clean the room. Someone still has to do the laundry. Someone still has to be there in the hotel to deal with emergencies that come up, which means hotel staff is going to go from having, three or four people who are getting paid, $40,000, $50,000 a year to having maybe just one manager on staff and a bunch of probably outsourced cleaning companies that are going to do the work of cleaning the hotels. And they get paid nothing. I mean, right, we're talking about $2-3 a room usually.
So is this really a good thing, Leibel?
So I think it's a good thing. And a lot of people are going to hate me for this. Not possible, right? What is it that Dan Kennedy says? If you haven't pissed anyone off by 12 o'clock, then you're not doing your job properly. I personally think that this is a natural progression, right? If we want to, let's just look at China as an example. 20 years ago, 30 years ago, the average person in China was making less than 50 cents a day, right? Which is well below the UN's poverty line. Now you have, they have a very growing middle class, much greater middle class than we have. I think the average worker there is making a decent amount of money. Even the poor people who were making, 50 cents, they're making now a few dollars a day, which is a huge progression. And it has caused, Chinese goods to be more expensive. When you have that progression, right, and getting that wealth where you had people who didn't have access to running water and food and cell phones, now they're the biggest internet buying market in the world, you have a natural progression. And so what happens is people have to move move up that pay scale. You can't keep paying people to do things that machines can do because they need to get paid more to support this lifestyle. 20 years ago, nobody could afford to have a phone like an iPhone, right? I mean, even just having a mobile phone was outrageously expensive. Even, the affluent could barely afford it. Now everyone's got it in their pocket, right? You've got a computer in your pocket. My first computer was, $2,000-$3,000 and can barely, do a tenth of what our phones do.
That's the truth.
Yeah.
There's still 931 million landlines left, and that we thought they'd be gone by 2020. So you're also making a case, and I know we've only got a couple of minutes left for this segment, but it sounds as if, Leibel Sternbach, that you're making a case that America may be an underdeveloped country.
In some ways, we are an underdeveloped country. That is definitely true, and it's a known fact. And it is a result of us being the first to develop certain technologies. A lot of countries have been able to leapfrog, whereas, landlines, right? We built this infrastructure for phones. We were the first country. We invented the phones. We were the first country to have phones. And, that made us a wealthy country, gave us an advantage. But then when you have these new nations, these developing nations, they went straight to cell phones. They went straight to the ultimate technology. They don't have tens of millions, billions of dollars worth of infrastructure that needs to be paid for, that investors need to recoup their money on because they never had them, whereas we do. And so we're slowly progressing. I mean, it's a known fact that the internet speed in the U.S. lags behind the rest of the world by a wide margin.
Oh, my gosh. Leibel, we're just about out of time. Where can our listeners go to get more information on this topic of the economy and whether or not we're heading for a recession?
So if you want more information, always check out, our blog as well as, podcasts and other shows. This is something I like to talk about a lot. I've also got a TikTok channel going on now. So I talk a lot about the economy over there. Seems like TikTok likes that.
Thank you, Leibel. We look forward to hearing from you again next week. Leibel's website is LeibelOnFire.com. That's LeibelOnFire.com. Thank you so much for sharing your weekend with us on New Beginnings. And right now it's time for It Happened This Week. The number of possible war crimes in Ukraine is now up to 7,600. Prosecutors are investigating at least 500 suspects and say they plan to charge 7 military members. The United Nations is also looking into 300 unlawful killings allegedly by Russian troops. Vice President Harris has tested positive for COVID-19. Harris tested positive on rapid and PCR test and is suffering suffering no symptoms. Harris says she's quarantining and hasn't been in close contact with the president or the first lady. And people who haven't had coronavirus are now considered in the minority. The CDC says about 60% of people tested between December and February had antibodies, meaning they were infected at some point. That's double the number from before the Omicron surge. Robinhood is laying off about 300 employees. The consumer investing and trading services company says that's 9% of its full-time workforce. The CEO called it the right decision to improve efficiency and to make Robinhood more responsive to customer needs. Amazon will not be punished for last year's warehouse collapse in Illinois. It happened when a tornado tore through Edwardsville, killing 6 workers. The Occupational Safety and Health Administration, known as OSHA, decided not to issue any penalties but raise concerns. And the Little League World Series is returning to normal for its baseball and softball tournaments. Fans weren't allowed last year because of the pandemic, and the year before that, organizers also had to cancel the series entirely. Events begin August 17th in Pennsylvania. It happened this week, and more New Beginnings is straight ahead.
Introducing the New Beginnings podcast, featuring career, health, and financial information for people on the go. To get your fresh start, visit freddiebell.com/newbeginnings. Check out the New Beginnings podcast today.
And we turn our attention now to Unity South Twin Cities, where the Reverend James Stacy is the senior minister. They have services at 9 and at 10:30 a.m. each Sunday morning. Let's join Minister Stacy with a program already in progress.
Calling Myrtle Fillmore to mind again in her story of her healing. Many people said, "Oh, Mrs. Fillmore, you must have been healed in an instant." She said, "No, I caught the idea of life, but my body needed some time, in her case, 2 years, to heal itself once she caught the idea, I am a child of God." That's my instruction. That's the truth of who I am, an expression of infinite life and power. That's what I know inwardly. And as I hold to that truth, if I remember my instruction manual, then in time and in process, I can make the changes in my life that I think are for my good. I can clean up my act, whatever that may be. I may make amends. But as I do it from a sense of power, of inner spiritual capacity. I don't do it from a sense of shame or guilt. Wake up before cleaning up. The poet Mark Nepo, who's on the cover of the current issue of Unity Magazine, it's there in our library, he wrote, "Misery is a moment of suffering allowed to become everything." He goes on to describe the process of waking up to a greater, more expansive view of life. Now, we all know pain in the body, or we might say pain in our soul, hard feelings, that does get our attention. And it gets our attention for the purpose, as we sang in the grace chant, it gets our attention that we may become aware of what needs to be healed, what greater truth needs to be revealed in our life. So it's like a caution sign saying, a healing is needed here. But it's important to begin with the centering, to read that instruction manual of your life that tells you who you are, how you are brought into being, what the truth of you is. And then from that point, you can make the changes in your life that you're guided to make. Reverend Dr. Michael Gott, minister of the very large Unity of Houston, challenged himself to write what we see on, I believe, CBS as a note to self. He conceived a letter as if life were writing a letter to him. That is, what would life say to him? And as Dr. Michael Gott described it, when I began to write this letter, something happened. Something opened in my consciousness and simultaneously bloomed in my heart. I felt this wondrous, infinite, cosmic presence of intelligence and love that birthed and sustains me, knew me, loves me, cherishes me. I felt awe at how big life is, and I felt valued and connected in an intimate way. There was no judgment, no human condition based, "I'll love you if you follow the rules" sort of love. I still feel this vast and intimate love. I feel honored and blessed to be alive in this human experience today. I don't feel it all the time. But this connection is there every moment I reach for it. That's our call, isn't it? To be awake, to be aware of the preciousness of life, and to know that we are a part of it. From the Gospel of John, the opening chapter that speaks of the indwelling of life itself within every man and woman in the world, as it says. In that chapter, it says, "Out of the superabundance of life and truth, we have all received gifts of grace beyond our imagination." And here's the kicker, the punchline, part of the instruction book. It reads, "You see, Moses gave us rules to live by. But Jesus the Christ offered us gifts of grace and truth that will awaken us." Do you hear the distinction? In Unity, we say in the Hebrew scriptures and tradition, Moses was the first bringer of the law. This is how life works. Do this, this happens. Don't do this, something else won't happen. Rules of living. And this is good knowledge. But Jesus brought this Christ idea that God is with us, within us. We can turn to that. As Reverend Gott said, we don't hold that idea all the time. We forget it. We slip up. But that truth is always there when we choose. I'm choosing heaven today. I'm choosing this higher truth for myself. This essential truth of who and what I am because God created me. God brought me into this world. Do you remember those old bumper stickers a few decades ago? I'm dating myself again. The ones that said, "God don't create no junk." But has that thought ever gone through your mind? In your moments of spiritual practice, perhaps in prayer, or as one of our friends shared in the early service, she goes out in the beauty of nature and is just inwardly awakened to be a part of all of life. But other times we forget it. And unlike that bumper sticker, we begin thinking of all our faults. And helpful teachers along the way, like Myrtle Fillmore, said, "Remember, you've looked at your faults enough. Look at your virtues. Look at what she liked to call your divine inheritance. Charles Fillmore described it this way. These spiritual ideals we have all been given to choose and to develop, to choose and to bring forth in our life. It's an instruction manual. And we do well to read the instructions first. So for a moment, I invite you to join me in the silence. This is the time when we can see the instructions of life within us most clearly.
Unity South Twin Cities, 7950 First Avenue South in Bloomington, Minnesota. You can join them each week either at 9 or at 10:30 a.m. and for their weekly activities as well. Each year on April 30th is National Honesty Day, and it challenges us to be truthful in all we do. We know the different kinds of lies, don't we? We've spared someone's feelings or fudged the truth just a little or maybe told an all-out whopper. Unless we walked on water, we've all told a lie or two. This observance encourages truthfulness. Whether we're conducting business or speaking with our children, honesty goes a long way toward instilling confidence. We all make mistakes, and sometimes we can't control the outcome of a situation. However, we can control our own actions and words, and we can speak the truth in all we do. The author of the book, The Book of Lies, M. Hirsch Goldberg, created National Honesty Day early in the 1990s. The former press secretary to a Maryland governor selected the last day of April in contrast to all the foolishness the first of the month brings. Remember, April Fools? The day is often used as a campaign for prevention against the most deceitful lies in history. Occasionally, the day also urges politicians to stay away from lies and to tell the truth. Today is National Honesty Day. And here are today's words to the wise. Freedom begins in the mind. Today's words to the wise, freedom begins in the mind. For more information about wise words, freddiebell.com. Wow, what a show this weekend. Special thanks to Cassie Crandall. I really appreciate you stopping by, as well as our good friend Leibel Sternbach, always talking about money and how we can keep more of it. The Reverend James Stacy from Unity South Twin Cities, always gracing us with some inspirational words. And a special thanks to you for making us a part of your weekend. Thank you for listening. Thank you for calling. Thank you for being a part of our show this weekend. I'm Freddie Bell, reminding you that every day is a chance for a new beginning. Goodbye, everybody.